Welcome to Understanding VC. I'm your host, Rahul. Understanding VC is a show where I talk to VCs to learn how they work. Today, my guest is Olivier Rossin. Olivier is a co-founder and managing partner at Phoebe Ventures. Phoebe, which stands for Entrepreneurs by Entrepreneurs, is an early stage VC fund with a geographic focus on Vietnam and Southeast Asia. Phoebe's partners, who have created 30 plus companies from scratch, back mission-driven founders, providing them with entrepreneurial know-how, experience-based advice in building MVPs, business development, fundraising, talent acquisition, etc. Prior to Phoebe, Olivier was a general partner at Project A Ventures, an operational VC in Europe and Latin America, with $500 million in assets under management. Now let's talk to him. Hey, Olivier. Thanks for joining me today on my podcast.
Yeah. Hi, Raul. Thanks a lot for having me.
Okay, cool. So, can we start with your background? Like, where did you grow up? What were your interests growing up?
Sure. So I grew up in the south of France in a city called Montpellier. In a time where mobile phones were not existing, neither video games, neither web. It was rather a soccer ball, tennis, racket, bike, and a dog. So very different time from... Well, it looks like almost another century. I'm not that old, but it was a very different lifestyle back then.
Yeah. So what did you study in college? And like, I've read that you spent some time in Brazil and now you're in Vietnam. So I'd like to kind of like know more about your professional journey as well.
Sure. I study at a business school in France. Then I started my career in a big American firm. Called Yahoo and Amazon at that time in 2000 were the two single global company. Facebook, Google were not even existing. And then from Yahoo, I moved to Microsoft, and from Microsoft to Google and YouTube. So I spent 9 years from analyst to C-level in those American company, where I learned a lot in terms of methodology. It really like positively, I believe, impacting my professional life and style. And I especially learned a lot at Google, fantastic company in terms of company culture, performance management, how to build and roll out program. So several things that I still leverage every single day. And after this kind of corporate life, I had the opportunity to create a startup. So I was bootstrapping a startup in my garage for 5 years and learn a lot on product, on IT, on fundraising, and we reach some kind of a nano or micro exit. But yeah, a great learning curve. And after that, I had the chance to join a new VC fund called Project A in Europe. It was at that time around 100 million US fund, 80 million euro back then. And then they raised a second fund at 200 million, and now they have around 500 million under management. And I spent some time in Berlin with the team. But as you said, several years in Latin America, more particularly Brazil, where we've made some investment and live and learn there during 7 years.
Okay. So how was the experience living in Brazil? It was an emerging market.
Correct. Yeah, it still is correct. Yeah. So first of all, amazing... amazing citizen, amazing landscape, amazing culture, very vibrant tech ecosystem. Potentially Brazil is top three or top four in the world in terms of unicorns or in terms of VC flow, and more or less at the same level with India. So yeah, great country and great continent to learn how to invest in emerging markets.
Okay. So, and then from Brazil, why start a VC fund in Vietnam?
Yeah. So first of all, I consider that Southeast Asia and Asia in general represent the most attractive opportunities nowadays in the world. That's the present and the future of the world are in Asia, and maybe at a second degree in Africa. But I'm very, very bullish of this region, and I believe I'm not the only one. The question is, where exactly in this part of the world? So I spent several months in the region, in Jakarta, in Singapore, in Vietnam, and in many other cities, contacting the top MBA, the top BCG, McKinsey guys, the partners in the PE firms, in the VC, obviously, good startup, and learn from them, because I've done a lot of research and I crunch a lot of numbers, but at the end of the day, the expert on the ground are the one who knows about the trends, about the hurdles they're facing, about the macro, the micro, and learn a lot. And I spotted out that, living around Singapore and Vietnam was a very promising bet for the next 10 to 15 years.
Okay. So you mentioned about your startup and your micro exit or nano exit you mentioned. So that was just the one startup that you did, or did you do more than one?
Yeah, it was exactly three company in 5 years. One in the advertising space, in the blog platform around the celebrities and influencers. Another one was in the user reviews. So it was a platform which aggregate all the user opinion about the different product and services. And the last one was in the sports betting. So several projects that I was involved at the inception.
Okay. So could you please talk about some of your failures while building those startups and then the lessons learned through those failures?
Sure. So first of all, even as a corporate, I made several mistakes by jumping from one big company to another, and lacking of being a bit impatient, and also sometimes being attracted by the payroll and not really think enough strategically. So I made a few wrong moves, and I think it's important to share that with the new generation. They need to learn also by doing and by making their own mistake. But at the end of the day, paycheck is important, obviously, but potentially we need also to consider other parameters like the quality of the people, like the quality of the challenge, that it's a bit like a chess, not only looking at the next step, but maybe one or two, three
steps.
So that's definitely, I could have the opportunity, or I had the opportunity to join a big group like Google or Facebook a bit earlier in my life, and I missed, or I did not accept some opportunities. So definitely at the investor level, I mean, basically you make mistake, and I make mistake, and still making in all the journey. So at my corporate life, at my entrepreneur life, at my investor life, or sometimes we fall in love with the idea, with the problem, and ended up investing in team who were not able to execute it properly. So net and bottom line, after 20 or 23 years of experience, everything now is around FOMFA, is about people. I would say is maybe 80% of my decision. The challenge and the mission, what I'm going to learn, how I'm going to impact and contribute, what the purpose, that matters a lot. And obviously we can reward it rather less with the paycheck, but more with equity and stake of the company based on the value creation and the performance. So how to be aligned, how to align interest. And so that's very, very important. But at the end of the day, life is short. And I tend to partner and to work with the people that I like to have a bottle of wine with, I like to have a dinner with, I like to learn from. I highly value and respect the human values and the work ethics. That's something which matters a lot to me. It was maybe when I was more younger or more naive, I was not only considering that, but nowadays is my main driver.
Okay. So can I just ask one more thing? What about some of the mistakes from your entrepreneurial life? Something that you can share with other founders that you would want to avoid?
Sure. Very simple one. Doing at least two projects at the same time. So two MVP at the same time, not focusing enough. Trying to scale too fast from one country to a few countries. Sell too fast or too early. So I've done a few and even a lot. And nowadays at Phoebe, I mean, we are four partners. The four of us, we created the 33 company. And one of our main value proposition is with the entrepreneurs is to share a bit this database of mistake, failure, learning. Definitely, we cannot share what each entrepreneur should do, because that's the secret sauce of each company, and us as an external, we don't really have the solution. We are very humble and low-key about that. But at least we should share what they should not do, because we work in what, 10 plus countries. We created, as I said, 33 companies. We invested now in 70 companies, and we are also LPs ourselves in 10 funds in the US and Europe.
Yeah.
So yeah, we basically connect the dots and try to see some patterns. Oh, this situation remind me this one. We've done that. How it perform? And yeah, it's a bit of experience. And as you said, learning, because experiencing is one thing, and learning from your mistake is another thing. So I get used to taking good notes of all of my mistake, to at least trying to not reproduce them twice. It happened, but I try to limit to reproduce, obviously, the same mistake.
Okay. So FEBE is an acronym for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs, right?
Yeah, you can call it FEBE. Yeah, FEBE, for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. FEBE. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So one thing that I really liked is you guys have laid out like all the questions that a potential founder would want to ask a VC. That I would thought was like really cool and very transparent. So one other thing that I would like to know is like, what is your due diligence process like? So let's say a startup approaches you to come pitch. What's your due diligence process like?
Sure. So we are a seed fund. So obviously we take the code of the seed business. We also, I believe, seasoned entrepreneurs and ourselves the main LP of our own fund. So we also try obviously to minimize the risk. So we try to kind of take the code of the seed fund, which is going very fast, be founder friendly, reduce the friction on the front and the side, but also minimize the risk, which is almost applying a Series A due diligence to the startup, not by bothering the founders. So we try to limit ourselves to potentially two calls with the founder before taking the decision and sending a term sheet, but doing a lot of homework with our team, doing a lot of homework with several of our LPs, which are all entrepreneurs and knowledgeable in several categories, and on top with our large network of experts. So I would say for 1 hour that we spend with the founder, we spend another 5 to 7 hours crunching numbers, researching, talking to clients, suppliers, stakeholders, to do our homework and try to reduce this risk, and also try to bring value to the founding team.
Okay. So what if the product is, do you invest in companies where the product is not out yet?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, many. I mean, I don't have the stat in mind, but we're doing a lot of pre-seed investment. So yeah. Several times we invest at the PowerPoint level. We even invest when the company or the holding company is not even registered in Singapore. So yeah, definitely. We go very, very early at the same time with the angel investment and the friends and family money.
Okay. So at the PowerPoint level, you can't really do a due diligence on a product yet, right? So
yeah, correct. But you have a lot of, I would say, or most of the time, comparable model in India, in Brazil. Yeah. And we try to learn from others. Obviously, we try not to reinvent the wheel, and we try to see some patterns from those when it happens, from similar model, talk to the GPs, talk to the founders, talk to former employee there. So yeah, we kind of doing a due diligence, but on other geographies to try to learn some potential hurdles and how the business behave over time, how the unit economics behave.
So it's most probably on the team and also the market in comparison to...
Correct. And at the team level, you know that we can do a lot of reference check and some pretty deep discussion about the human values, the vision, the work ethics, less than on the IPO, Decacorn and SPAC. That's not really our cup of tea, I would say, but really on the fundamentals and the value of the entrepreneurs.
Okay. So what percentage of your fund is your typical investment?
Like the initial check is around 500K. We can follow and reinvest like a million. So the fund is basically 35 to 40% initial investment and 60-65 in follow-on. And we will have a portfolio of somewhere between 25 to 30 companies.
Okay. So I was just trying to figure out like what would be the support as a VC would be like from FEBE.
Several things. It's a very interesting point. So yeah, we try at the partner level and at the team level to spend around like 40% of our time on portfolio management. But that's definitely not a one-man show. Huh? That's we're building a platform. So 4 GPs, we have 7 people in the team. We have now 65 LPs which are contributing. And in terms of support, so the one that I mentioned earlier is the MVP. When possible, like my partners own 21 companies here in Southeast Asia, we try to plug the solution to one of our company in order to have feedback and try to reach together a product market fit. Done it several times. For example, we invested in Nano, which is an early wage access platform here in Vietnam. We tested it on one of our supermarket chain. And then for the go-to-market in step two, we connected the founder with several potential clients. Some of them are LPs, some of them are close connection, but that's the privilege of age to have a large, I would say, network. On top of that, yeah, we receive at Phoebe a lot of CV from young to senior talents. We try to screen those talent and make a lot of intro to our portfolio company. Obviously, fundraising, we live and co-invest with local, regional and global funds. So we are in a good position to advise the founder about the different fund, the value added, the reputation, the typical check size, follow on and so on and so forth. And last but not least, I would say that we describe ourselves as the sparring partner of the founders on WhatsApp. I think it's a great methodology to scale. Board meeting are good, but board meeting are whatever, monthly or quarterly. And we chat a lot, sharing our experience on whatever, stock option, organization, recruitment, and several go-to-market strategy when there is a regional expansion. So we do that a lot over WhatsApp, which allow us to scale and to interact every single week with several of our portfolio companies. That's definitely something we pay a lot of attention.
Yeah. I mean, some of the funds, they double down on, like in terms of support on companies, portfolio companies that are doing well, rather than like some of the companies that might not make it. So do you have a similar approach or your
support? Makes total sense. That's a great question and a great, I would say, comment, because intuitively people are tending to support the one who are not, doing well. But yeah, VC is a power law distribution out of, let's say you build a portfolio of whatever, 30 companies, only the 2 or 3 which are really like killing it and making it will return the fund. So yeah, some VC and tend to follow the clear winner. And as you said, double down financially, but also double down in terms of resources and support. Having said that, yeah, we are human. It's not only about the numbers. It's as I said earlier, it's about the people. It's about the journey, the mutual relationship. So we find the time and we try to work harder. And we are entrepreneurs ourselves. So we like we say in China, the 9 to 6. So 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. Yeah, and therefore we find the time. We find the time to support and to have very short, I would say, SLA. If a founder contact me, I have to reply in the next 1, 2, or 3 hours. We cannot delay. They are top priorities. We are founder-centric, founder-driven. I consider the founders are my top one client, I would say. So I need to maximize my NPS, my Net Promoter Score. And I'm here to serve them, you know. I consider myself as one of the employees, and I'm here to bring the support they need when they need and be kind of, it's a VC on demand. We are proactive, but the day they ask us, I stop immediately what I'm doing and trying to humbly support.
Yeah. So what is your working style when you work with your portfolio companies? So are you like an active investor where you're heavily involved, or do you proactively reach out to the founders to offer them support, or you wait for the founder to reach to you.
Yeah, so we see ourselves as a operational VC. So yeah. Our strength is that we were and we still are entrepreneurs. So some VC are potentially doing better than us in terms of strategy or technological advice. It depends on the background of each of us. Huh? We have a kind of a decent level of self-awareness. We know what we are okay at, to not say good, and still to be humble. And we know that we are not really creating value. So we try to stay in our zone where we contribute. And as I said, we created 33 companies and bring it to from zero, really from scratch, to a few million or a few hundred million in revenue. We haven't IPO any company, but we generate significant profit in several times. So the 0 to 1 or the 0 to 3, we've done it. But we never created Grab or Gojek or neither Amazon or Google. We are very humble. But the first 100 million or 150 million, we've done it several times. And I think we are okay with those steps in terms of organization, recruitment, stock option, company culture, performance management, fundraising, and so on and so forth, because we leave it several times.
Yeah. But there might be instances where the founders are a little bit, there might be cases where there might be like maybe pushback from the founders when you're trying to be like an operational VC, because...
No, so by operational is not doing things, is sharing mistake and failure and learning on some operational stuff. And our philosophy is that we are a minority shareholder. We are absolutely not bossy, but rather founder-friendly people. So it's always rather a founder bringing a point saying, hey, that's the challenge that I'm facing. And we try to first listen, have a lot of empathy, be very constructive and positive, and say, okay, yeah, that's the question asking, trying to elaborate about, yeah, which scenario do you see? Scenario A, scenario B, what are the pros and cons? Do a kind of a live SWOT in a way on that. And then arguing in a very humble way with the founders, just to open some windows. And at the end of the day, that's his decision. So it's just a few back and forth, and like we're playing tennis table together, rather as another co-founder, but we don't have any voice at the end of the day. We don't push that out. We're just here to have a conversation, and in order that the founder can make up his mind.
Okay. So I have a question. I think you've answered. I mean, you've mentioned that your first check is 500K, and then just like 33%, and then you have up to a 1 million follow-on. So does it really matter like where the fund is in terms of its life cycle? Like if it's towards the end of the cycle, will you have that 1 million or?
I mean, on our side, we started the fund in, I would say, in January 2020. So we are definitely, fund is rather 8 to 10 years. We are only 18 months. So I think it's a smart question. But yeah, for us, we're not facing this issue yet. We are really at the early days. And I think it's a question of discipline in reservation at the end of the day. So yeah, I already had the chance and the opportunity to work in VC. I learned from that. And it's I related that to your question with, do you double down on the winners or do you try to save the others? That's a very interesting question. And for us, it's just be disciplined and just put the money for the reservation and the latest investment opportunity, do it with your next fund. Do the first check with your next fund. It's not rocket science. Huh? It's just a question of discipline and be aware of it. But nothing so complex to in this.
Okay. So is there anything in VC that you would... do differently? Any aspects of VC where you want to see a change?
I would say that for us, as a founder-centric, founder-driven company, founders should be the one who are under the spotlight, should be the one who are all the reward. I'm not saying it's not the case, but we want to to do it even more. And us, the VC, we are the kind of humble enabler, rather in the backstage, hard work, work ethic, humility, low-key. That's the way we operate. I mean, we're sharing today some stuff, but hopefully with a lot of humility and to share with the community. But yeah, that's our style. So the founders deserve, when you create yourself a company or even more, you know how tough it is, how short are the nights, the hurdles and the doubts are huge. You have a lot of up and downs. You have a lot of no-go every single day. You know, it's very difficult to get a company out of the ground. You need to have a lot of energy, obviously talent. But we respect that, big time. And then we are in the backstage, They are the ones.
Okay. So, I've been recently thinking regarding this, is, by the way, regarding how VCs work internally. So why don't associates who work on a deal, so get a carry just like the partners? Do you think that is a good idea?
I mean, I believe that each firm has its own alignment of interest. I mean, I see that it's a people business at the end of the day. VC is like whatever, consulting, a law firm, almost investment banking. So yeah, I think it makes total sense to align interest. You have in VC, you have a lot of churn and the cycle is pretty long. So obviously it's a question of cliff. It's a question of vesting, but yeah, it makes total sense.
Okay. I don't know why a lot of VCs don't do this. I've been reading about like a lot of young operator VCs trying to do similar things with the rolling funds and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't have any statistics, especially here in Southeast Asia. So I cannot tell you what the portion of with or without, carry. I cannot comment further.
Yeah. So in terms of the types of businesses that you invest, right? So from our conversation earlier, my understanding at least is that you mostly invest in businesses that has already been proven in a different market?
Not really. I mean, it helps to understand faster. It helps to do faster due diligence. But not really. We will see more and more, and we start seeing true innovation in Southeast Asia and true disruption. The new business model are not only coming from Silicon Valley, China, or Israel. They are coming from Southeast Asia, and they will come from more and more from those regions, including also Brazil, definitely.
Yeah. So what are some of the technology trends?
One point regarding what you call the proven business model. Even if a kind of a very, very similar model exists, we don't believe in the copy and paste. The localization matters a lot. So we live in a world, think global, act local, but obviously the language, the culture matters a lot. And therefore, this kind of tropicalization efforts is definitely a key success factor. So even if the business exists, whatever, in Brazil or in India, we try to learn a few things. That's normal because that's data which are available. Yeah. We will be kind of idiot to not learn from it's a mark of humility to learn from others. But we also look and spend a lot of time on how are we going to execute locally? What are the factors who are going to change, and what it fits with the local ecosystem? That what really, really matters.
Okay. So what are some of the technology trends that you're paying attention to, especially from in Southeast Asia?
Sure. So from a kind of high level perspective, we truly believe in the digitization of everything. I think we can say, yeah, software is eating the world. But I think every industry, I mean, digital is everywhere. Every industry need a piece of technology to be more efficient. So we look at all the category. As we like a lot of fintech, we're following the DeFi, the decentralized platform and finance. We're also very sensible to, I would say, sustainability and climate change, even if it's not 100% yet reflected in our portfolio. But so everything about the carbon neutral economy, it's something that as citizen is something very important for us. And yeah, as you said, we benchmark a lot also the different trends in other emerging economies. We are generalists. We love infrastructure. So yeah, definitely fintech, logistics, education, health, and e-commerce enabler, social commerce are something very, very important for us. But at the end of the day, I would answer in a different way, saying that technology and thesis matters a lot. And we are tech focused, but we even more founder-centric and founder-driven than tech-driven in a way, especially at the early stage that we invest. So the capability of the founder, its human values, the trust we're building in a such short period of time even matters more than the category, because at the end of the day, you can pivot, you can find a way to enlarge the market. You can find a way to crack the unit economics and break even. But at the end of the day, you don't really change people. It's not even our intention to change, or at least change for the better. But so people is more, way more important than the technology itself. And therefore, we are very kind of humble and candid, and we let the founder surprising us. And they are the one who knows the market. We cannot be expert in X country. We cannot be expert in 30 different industry. So we know what we don't know, and we let them, surprise us. And then we do our homework to kind of backtest and kind of complement what they presented to make our own opinion.
Yeah. So I would like to end by maybe getting a sense of what the Vietnam tech ecosystem looks like now?
Sure. So I believe that in Southeast Asia, Vietnam is the next big thing. If we compare Southeast Asia with Latin America, Indonesia being the Brazil of Southeast Asia, so, and Vietnam is Mexico of Southeast Asia, sizable population, a lot of talent, is the country number one, is a Confucius culture country, investing a lot in education, top three or five in the world in terms of math and science. Very hard worker and talented and great work ethics people. So definitely we place a lot of trust in this country, and we are very honored to support this ecosystem and many great stuff happening at the early stage level, and a few already company like VNP, VNJ, Tiki, and several others at the later stage who demonstrate that can build a big company in Vietnam. I hope that VNG will become a global company anytime soon. And definitely the Vietnamese entrepreneurs, on top of being the leader on the big home market, can definitely become the regional leader and build also some global company. So we're seeing in our deal flow and even in our portfolio, much more Vietnamese company with a regional or global ambition. And definitely Vietnam is one of the top country in terms of tech scene, with a lot of tech talent and a pretty big internal market.
Okay, cool. Awesome. This has been a really great conversation. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure, Rahul. Have a good evening. Take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
Bye. If you like this podcast, please do subscribe at understandingvc.com and leave us a review.